Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Weird Al Yankovic launched his Bad Hair tour 25 years ago today, promoting his similarly named album featuring parodies like Amish Paradise. I spoke with Weird Al about becoming the greatest song spoofer in music history.
Mr. Weird Al, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, thank you.
Well, I know a lot of us can recite and sing a lot of your songs, but a lot of our listeners probably don't know sort of how you got started. You know, when did you actually learn the accordion, and what were some of your musical influences, either polka or otherwise?
Well, I took 3 years of accordion lessons from age of 7 to 10, so that's my formal musical training.
Gotcha.
I kind of got tired of learning, you know, polkas and classical pieces, because that's what they teach you in accordion school. They don't teach you Led Zeppelin. It's all polkas and things like that, which, you know, nothing wrong with that, but it's sort of like how cliche. You play the accordion, so you're going to play polkas.
Right.
And I found out early on that my friends didn't want me in their rock bands because they didn't see how an accordion would fit in. So I learned early on if I wanted to, like, you know, make a name for myself, I'd have to kind of go a different direction.
Right, right. Did you listen to any, you know, satire spoof stuff like Zappa or any of that sort of stuff?
Oh, huge. Yeah, I love Zappa, you know, SCTV and Monty Python. Through the Dr. Demento show, I was exposed to people like Tom Lehrer and Alan Sherman and Stan Freberg and Spike Jonze. So, yeah, I mean, I got exposed to a lot of stuff like that and made me think, like, yeah, I can do this.
And you did. You mentioned Dr. Demento. How'd you get, you know, A, get hooked up with them and on that show, and B, how'd you parlay that into your first album?
Well, you know, when I first started out, I mean, this is a couple of decades before there was such a thing as YouTube, so there weren't a lot of options for a teenage kid writing stupid songs with an accordion. And Dr. Demento was the only person in the universe that would play that kind of stuff on the radio. So I would record things in my bedroom with a little tiny cassette tape recorder and send it off to the Demento show. And if he thought it was good enough, he'd play it on the air. So I got a lot of early exposure that way, and he gave me encouragement, and by the time I graduated from college, I actually had a song that was popular enough, My Bologna, that Capitol Records released it as a single.
Oh, yeah, and that got the whole ball rolling. Take me back to, do you remember where you were when you actually penned those lyrics to My Bologna? Were you eating bologna?
I don't think so. Where was I? I was in college. I think I was 19 years old, and I was a disc jockey at my college station, which is where the name Weird Al came from. It was sort of like my radio air name.
Gotcha.
And the Knack was huge that summer. Like, every other request on the request line was for my Sharona. And, you know, My Bologna is not the most brilliant or creative variation on a theme, but I thought, oh, that's, you know, that's funny. And I took my accordion across the hall into the bathroom, where there was a nice reverb and acoustically perfect tiled walls. And I recorded My Bologna and sent it to Dr. Demento, and that became a huge hit.
That's hilarious. And obviously you put that on your first self-titled album was like 83, so that was on there. But you also had Take Me Into Some of those other ones. It was I Love Rocky Road and another one, Rides the Bus. You know, where'd you come up with those?
Well, kind of the same way. I mean, another one, Rides the Bus, was done live on the Dr. Demento show. I recorded it. I think I wrote it the day before I played it live for the first time on the radio, and we never re-recorded it. I mean, that live air check of that performance on the radio became the master tape, and it got bootlegged around the world. It went viral in days before things went viral. You know, I was still in college. I was, you know, I'd go back, to my apartment, and my roommate would say, "Hey, you got a call from a radio station in New Zealand. They want to know how they can get a copy of another one, Rides the Bus." So it was kind of crazy. I didn't have a record deal. I didn't have anything. And all of a sudden, I had this worldwide hit.
That's fantastic. Now, obviously, yours truly was born in 84, so I was like, you know, I wasn't really conscious for Eat It and all that stuff. I sort of discovered them in hindsight and laughed my butt off. But my big one in my youth was Bad Hair Day, man. You killed it on that.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks.
How did you come up with Amish Paradise? What else was in there? Lump, Phony Calls, the Alternative Polka. That thing was, I played the hell out of that thing.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, Amish Paradise was, it's still, you know, one of my biggest hits, and I just thought that was a fun idea because I was trying to think of what would be the most diametrically opposed to the gangsta lifestyle, and I thought, well, Amish, we'll do a song about what it's like living in an Amish paradise.
Do you have a favorite lyric in that? Is it Churning Butter Once or Twice or Ezekiel or what is?
Oh, it's hard to pick. I mean, I like that song because it references everything from Gilligan's Island to Prince to Pulp Fiction.
Only you could cover that gamut. That's awesome. Well, there's so many others we could go through. Do you mind if we could just rapid fire a little bit?
I'll give it a shot.
All right, man. Eat It.
Oh, well, you know, again, you know, back in the day, I would go for the most obvious idea. And, you know, I thought, you know, and I like to write songs about food, so Eat It seemed appropriate. And nowadays, I couldn't write a song like Eat It because there'd already be 100,000, you know, Eat It parodies on YouTube.
Right.
But back in the early 80s, I kind of had the feel to myself, so I could go for the low-hanging fruit.
And Michael Jackson was perfect for it. As well as for Fat. How about that one?
Same thing. I thought that was the logical follow-up to Eat It. And the first time I saw Michael Jackson's Bad video on TV, before the video was even over, I thought, oh, I've got to do Fat. I could just visualize like being like 800 pounds and trying to get through the subway turnstiles.
That's just great. Like a surgeon.
Obviously my Madonna parody. That was actually from an idea by Madonna. She indirectly suggested it. She apparently was talking to a friend of hers one day in New York City and said just kind of offhandedly, "Oh, I wonder when Weird Al's going to do Like a Surgeon." And her friend knew a friend of my manager's, and it got back to me. And I thought, "Oh, not a bad idea, Madonna. I think I will." And I got to do that video in an actual hospital. It was actually an abandoned hospital that was mostly used for movie sets and for videos and things like that. So it was nice. I got to writhe around on the floor for a music video, and I usually just do that for my own personal amusement, but it was nice to do it professionally.
Smells Like Nirvana.
That was 1992. I was very happy to do that song because I was a big Nirvana fan, and I didn't think they would become popular enough to do a parody of. I thought, oh, Smells Like Teen Spirit. This is a great song. Too bad it's not gonna be a big hit. And then when it went on to like dominate our entire culture, yeah. I thought, well, now's the time.
And perfect for you floating in the pool on the cover, and that was just great.
And we got the same photographer that shot Nirvana's cover to shoot that cover.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Oh, wow, okay. It's all about the Pentiums. Yeah.
That was my Puff Daddy parody. That was a fun one to do. We got Drew Carey and Emo Phillips and a lot of fun people on that video. I kind of thought that was going to get a lot more attention than it did, but it came out at a time when MTV was, by and large, stopping to play music videos, so it didn't get quite the traction that I was hoping for. And in fact, when I did White and Nerdy several years later, I was thinking, well, this is sort of like treading the same kind of territory, so I'm not sure if this is going to do that well. And then White and Nerdy wound up being my biggest hit ever. So it's all about the timing. My nerd culture stuff, you know, it's got to hit at the right time.
Why do you think that was? So like you said, Pentiums was like, you know, as MTV was winding down, but then White and Nerdy was like 06 and that took off. Was it because the internet, you know, wasn't as big as it was in 99 for Pentiums? And then
I think there was a tipping point for nerds, quite frankly. I mean, you know, it was about, you know, around 2006 when I think the whole world collectively said, hey, you know, nerds are actually kind of cool. They make all the fun toys, all the shiny fun things, and they kind of rule the world. Why were we making fun of them all this time? You know, it's cool to be a nerd. And all of a sudden, you know, people were like bragging about their nerd cred, which is something that I never heard of in high school. I mean, nerds were the people that got beat up at recess. You know?
You wish it existed. existed back then.
Right. But you know, right about the time that White and Nerdy came out, I think there was sort of a tipping point for like nerd empowerment. All of a sudden, all the nerds were coming out of the closet and saying, yeah.
Yeah, you got all the conventions and Big Bang Theory. Yeah, it's true. It's around that time, yeah. All right, and which brings us back around to your latest one, Tacky, which of course was Happy and Word Crimes Blurred Lines. I feel like those got some more play than a lot of the old ones even. Like, that was huge.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, my newest album was my highest charting album ever. It was the number one album, which kind of blew my mind, and ostensibly, it's the biggest album of my career, so I'm real happy about that. We did the 8 videos in 8 days promotion, which kind of dominated the internet the week the album came out, and yeah, it did, you know, I'm still kind of blown away by the whole reaction to it.
Exactly, and if there's anyone out there that sort of would try to write you off as, you know, someone silly, you know, spoofing songs, you've got 4 Grammys, man. You're laughing to the bank. Tell me sort of how it's sort of like a serious art, because it is, you know, it takes some really genius to write that stuff.
Well, thanks. I mean, you know, there is some craft involved in it. I mean, my detractors say that, oh, my 5-year-old kid changes the words to songs, and right. You know, certainly that's not all that I do, and you know, it's hard to do it well and do it consistently, and you know, it takes a lot of talent to do songs in all sorts of different genres, and I credit my band with that. I've had the same band since the early 80s, and they're able to do every genre imaginable. So it you know, that's really the secret to my success, is I surround myself with very talented people.
That's awesome. Before we go, got to ask you about UHF. Talking about surrounding yourself with talented people.
Thanks. Yeah, I got to work with a lot of really wonderful people, and that was really a blast. I mean, we really enjoyed making UHF, and unfortunately it didn't do that well at the box office, but it went on to become what they say is a cult classic. It, you know, kind of found its audience on cable TV and on DVD and UHF and VHS and Blu-ray, and you know, there are people that are obsessed with it. I mean, they've seen it like literally hundreds of times. It's sort of like the Rocky Horror Picture Show for some people.
What's next on the horizon? You noodling any others? Any songs on the radio now that could be prime for the Weird Al treatment?
Honestly, I haven't been very proactive about coming up with new material. I'm going to wait till I get off the road, and then I'm also working on a few other projects, some various things which I'm unfortunately not at liberty to talk about.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, it'll happen eventually. I'm just not, you know, I'm not pushing it and I'm not rushing it, so it'll happen when it's the right time.
There's no Uptown Skunk or anything like that. We got
not currently. No.
Awesome. Weird Al, thanks so much for joining us. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. Take care. Bye bye.
Thanks so much for joining us on Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Remember to hit the subscribe button and give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time. I wanted to take a second to tell you about an app I really enjoy. Living in the DC area is great, and Podcast DC gathers all of the local shows that I like all in one local app. Health, sports, local news, politics, and so much more. Podcast DC is the new local app with hundreds of DC area podcasts to choose from. I can earn exciting rewards just for listening and share the podcasts I love instantly. Available in the App Store or in Google Play, listen local with Podcast DC.